So, Berto, have you, how many Stranger Things episodes have you seen?
I've seen all of season one.
All of season one.
And I've seen the first five of season two. How many are there in season two? Like 10?
Nine or 10.
So I'm about halfway through.
Yeah, I think nine. Okay.
So the last, spoiler alert, the last thing that happened.
Well, wait. Okay. So we have to talk. So are we going to spoil up through episode five?
I was just trying to let you know where I was, just to be clear. But
let's spoil up through episode five. And I'm going to say some things beyond episode five with the thought that I don't want to spoil it for Berto or anyone else. So because we hate having to edit ourselves.
Yes.
Well, so did you like it? Do you like season two so far?
I'm enjoying season two a little better than season one.
Really?
Now, I'll say that with two caveats. Certainly, the novelty and the references in season one were like amazing. And then in season two, there's more references and more cool stuff like that. But the novelty is worn a little bit. That said, I sort of find season two to be more stressful and scary.
Yeah, it's very scary.
Yeah.
I mean, season one was definitely scary too. Definitely scary. But season two is...
It's more haunting.
Yeah, it's a little darker, you know, with Will, right?
Where's
Will at your point?
Yeah, so what's happened where I'm at is... what's her name? Six. I was going to say six.
11.
11 went and met her mom.
Okay.
And Will is... They just went and dug down under the ground to rescue the cop.
Okay, Hopper.
And Will's been like, you know, trying to help them, but he's also like, you know, he's possessed, basically.
Right. So you're past the point where Will has been invaded.
Yeah, he's been very invaded.
That was dark shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he has this talk with Bob, and Bob's like, you know, you just got to stand up. You just got to turn around and say no.
And that's the moment in the movie where it works.
Yeah. And he turns around.
And he tries it.
And
he really tries it.
And he's such a fragile actor.
So that would have been the moment in the movie where the creature backs off.
Yeah. Or someone shows up.
Someone shows up.
And saves him. Gandalf.
Finally,
the Gandalf
instead
character.
Instead, he gets raped.
Yeah, mouth raped by this.
Everything raped. Brain raped.
Oh.
I agree. So between the way that Eleven is behaving... And what, you know, what she's going through and him, it's dark and it's scary.
Yeah, it's dark too once you find out pretty soon about why the mom lost her mind.
Okay.
Like,
I mean, I did see this sequence where they were basically, they had her and they were doing like electroshock.
Oh, okay. So that's dark too.
Yeah. Like, and then she's got a combination to a thing.
She's stuck in like these flashing images.
Yes. Apple, something.
Rainbow.
Butterfly, rainbow.
Three to the left.
Yeah.
Da, da, da. Like,
yeah.
She's stuck in this. Can you imagine being stuck in a loop like that?
Oh, my God. Incredible. So what I was going to say is.
Well, let's introduce the show.
Oh, yeah.
This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm a therapist, a professor, and a binge watcher of Stranger Things when it comes out. Who are you, Berto?
My name is Humberto Castañeda. I hold three world records in the game of Joust.
So I, the video game?
No.
Oh. Just a short little thing. I didn't like it as good as season one, but I definitely liked it.
Okay.
I binged it in two nights.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's how much I liked it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like Mindhunter, I watched in probably like
a week or so.
Well, I probably watched it. Yeah. Over the span of a couple of weeks at like 20 minutes at a time.
I see. Okay.
Stranger Things. It's the story is so once it got going in season two, it's like, you just got to know what happens.
Right.
You know? Netflix show 2017, 94% Rotten Tomatoes, created, written, directed, produced by the Duffer Brothers. So yeah, we're going to spoil it up through episode five. So let's talk about the good and the bad. Let's start with the goods.
Sure.
So what was good about it?
I mean, Ghostbusters. I was so happy when they had Ghostbusters.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I would have killed to have that costume.
Right. Well, that's one of the bads that I have.
Oh,
actually,
do you?
Is like, today, those costumes would be like insane.
Yeah.
You know, for
back then, they would have been ridiculous.
Yeah. Actually. Like back then,
no one would have had that.
84, because it's set in 84, I think.
Yeah.
People didn't do Halloween the way they do today.
Okay.
Like today, you would see a costume like that maybe on some people.
Yeah. So you thought that was anachronistic.
Yeah, I was like, I would have liked it if it was way jankier, you know?
I could totally understand that criticism.
Like the three of them had good jumpsuits, but one of them couldn't afford it, so he didn't have a good jumpsuit.
I mean, they did. One of them had a crappier jumpsuit, but not crappy enough.
But very good, you know.
Yeah.
And the
trappers and the things.
Yeah, they had the trap with the yellow yeah. and the black. It looked exact, yeah. you know. And that I wished it would have been like a hose from a vacuum, and then like just a backpack,
totally.
just a regular backpack.
Because where did they get those? Who built those?
Right. What kind of material scientist?
To be fair though, they might have found them on eBay.
Yeah. Right. So that I mean, you know, it wasn't a terrible thing, but
so you're right. I didn't even think of that because I was thinking was. I mean, I loved Ghostbusters, and so I was sitting there like, oh my God, I would have died for that costume. But right. Of course, you're right. What costume?
Right. Now, when they go to the Halloween party, and there's all the costumes there, that was more realistic
yeah.
because the costumes, like one guy just had like a really makeshift toga.
That was more like out of a Karate Kid.
Right.
You know?
So what's some other good things that we could
all say? Right. I mean, I love the music
yeah.
and the arcades.
Yeah.
Oh my God, the arcade is awesome.
Yeah. I liked the fact that the bad scientist guy wasn't super evil.
Oh, right. Paul Reiser.
Like, I was like, oh, is this guy, because in the beginning of this, you know,
yeah.
Well, so maybe I'm spoiling a little bit, but.
Well, no, at the very beginning, you don't know who he is, so you're thinking he's the new bad guy.
He's
met with the sheriff and they've talked through the stuff, and the sheriff's like, you better investigate this because you don't
okay,
let
your
Okay,
so I'm spoiling it a little bit in that, I'm pretty sure I am anyway, that the Paul Reiser character in the beginning is, he seems like an evil character.
Yeah.
And I was worried it was going to really go full evil government situation. But pretty much halfway, maybe just after where you're at, you start learning that the Paul Reiser character is trying to do his job, and he's not evil. You
well, because like they brought in the girl and her boyfriend, or not the boyfriend.
Steve.
Steve. I never know these names.
Or well, not Steve. Brother of Will.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is that kid's
name? We love these commercially viable shows that we don't know names of.
Let's see. The Jonathan.
Jonathan.
Jonathan okay. Byers, yeah.
So anyways, remember they went to, they were confronting them, they got captured yeah. and they were confronting them, but it was like, man, this is what we're doing here.
right. They're more, yeah. So and it you got to watch the rest.
In fact, in some ways, they're now being unreasonable because he's like, listen, trust me. If this gets out to the countries we don't want, it's going to be way worse.
Right.
And yet now they're like, nah, we're doing it anyways. Right.
I loved Bob. The Duffer Brothers originally wrote the Bob character as a antagonist. He was going to
really?
Yeah, he's going to be like a jerk.
The bad stepdad?
Yeah, bad stepdad. But when Sean Astin came on board, they rewrote the entire character.
Nice.
And I loved, every time Bob was on screen, I was digging it.
I actually, it's so great because I've had this mix of like annoyed by this, but then realizing that I'm only annoyed because of how crappy our expectations are.
Yeah.
Because I'm sitting there going like, why is he not being a dick to the kids? Right? And I'm like, when do we find out that he's not, when does the other shoe drop?
Yeah.
And instead, like, he's just like a nice guy.
Yeah.
And what she needs and what that family needs.
Yeah. Yeah. He's funny. Sean Astin. You haven't seen.
I mean, he went and helped them rescue the cop.
Okay. Have you seen him with the map inside the buyer's house?
Yeah, because remember, she's like trying to keep him away, and he's like,
and he comes in.
Bob the Brain, that's what they call him. And she's like, come in.
Yeah, that scene is so good.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, but why? You know, yeah. Like there's these lines that Aston is just, it's just yeah. beautiful. Cause you're just like the tension there. Cause it's like Aston doesn't know what's happening.
Right.
Anyway.
It's super cool.
Yeah. I love Steve. You know, I liked how
he became super likable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe he became likable at the end of last season.
That's fair. But yeah.
Because he could have been a character that they didn't really focus on this season.
Well, and remember, it was a shock at the end of the last season when she's back with him.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, they're back together.
Totally liking that.
And
it's like,
yeah, that was a great choice.
Yeah.
That's one thing the show has done is they have subverted expectations
right.
Along the way.
Right. They're like, well, it's cliche to have a stepdad.
Right.
You know, who is a dick. I liked how they changed the story, you know, pretty yeah. significantly, they didn't just repeat the same story.
That is one. There is one aspect about it that I don't like.
What?
It's just not as effective, I should say. In the first story, the problem is very obvious and clear from the start.
Yeah.
This child has gone missing.
Right.
In this one, it's like, I mean, I like it, but it's just like,
yeah.
he's having nightmares, but why?
And right, yeah.
So it's just a little harder to relate.
Right. Yeah. I totally agree with that that it takes a while for the obvious problem to emerge.
Yeah. Other than, well, all the pumpkins are dying. I mean, that's a problem, you know?
Like, yeah. But it doesn't become you. In fact, at your point, do you even know what the problem is exactly?
Oh, no, because the scientists noticed this effect that the stuff that they found in the crops has.
Yeah.
And obviously we know that there's this creature and he's invaded Will, but that's where I'm at.
Right. Yeah. So,
and this is five episodes in.
Right, right. So eventually you get more of that story.
Right.
And then it very quickly like wraps itself up.
It's sort of one of the problems that the prequels to Star Wars fine, I'll acknowledge them temporarily. But one of the problems they had was you would think it was a clear problem statement. You know, yeah. the descent into madness of Darth Vader. But that's only like the if you're really into the Star Wars universe, you sort of know why that's important.
Yeah.
Right. But as just a movie, just coming into it as a movie,
right.
you don't really have the context. It's like, why do I care what's happening?
Right.
Whereas in the original, right, you get right off the bat, geez, my uncle and aunt were killed. Oh, this princess got kidnapped. Like, well, there's a lot of shit that happens right off the bat.
And you have this evil empire that is blowing
right.
up planets.
Right.
You know?
Right. So in the same way, in the first episode of the first season, kid goes missing.
Right.
What the hell?
Right. It takes a while. That's one criticism about the second season is it takes a while for the story to kind of get going. Mm-hmm. It's like the first few episodes are almost like prologue to the first season mm-hmm. in a certain way, you know?
Yeah.
They're sort of like answering questions and
that's
wrapping
true.
Things up. And anyway.
But I am enjoying it, though.
Yeah. I still enjoyed it, though. But I remember thinking, like, where's this going?
Yeah.
You know? But I remember totally enjoying watching it. Yeah. I like the fact that there's more Lucas and more Dustin.
Yeah.
And Will, Noah, played by Noah Schnapp, is an amazing kid actor.
He's great. Like I'm sad in a way that he had such little involvement in the first one.
Right.
And glad he's like key in
yeah.
this one.
I mean, the faces he makes and the terror and the pain faces that he makes
right.
is like just so believable.
Yeah. And I've also so far found that they're doing a good job balancing, 'cause they have a lot of characters.
Right.
There's a lot of like storylines and yeah. I'm like, it's being balanced fairly well.
Right. Yeah. You feel like you're the one, is it Finn? Is that the main kid? Finn. Yeah. Finn. He's the main kid of the four.
Yeah, he's the one who's upset at the redhead girl.
He was like the main character
in the first
one.
Season. Yeah.
And this season, he's like really secondary, you know?
And actually, it's funny. His what's happening to him, at least so far, reflects the reality, which is he's playing sort of second fiddle, and he's upset about that in the because he's like, this redhead's coming, and like, it's disrupting our team, and you know, and that's kind of neat. I also really like the plot with the little creature, the polywog, the
D'Artagnan.
I've seen it open its mouth, but I knew sort of from the beginning, I'm like, that's got to be one of those creatures.
I loved that whole story arc. The amount of story arcs that they managed to cram into 9 very mm-hmm. concise episodes is actually pretty impressive. So there's a whole story arc to that, to that whole thing.
And by the way, 11 and...
8. Oh, no, sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. 11 and the dad, the cop.
Yeah.
What's his name? Hopper. Their relationship? That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Because they could have made him always super understanding. And instead, he's totally ineffective at one point.
Right. He's being a jerk. And a lot of parents can relate to that.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. Story-wise, especially if you remember season 1,
right?
He lost his daughter. And
he's so overprotective as a result.
Right. Right. Yeah. And logical,
of course.
Like if anyone finds out about her,
right.
I mean, game over.
It's just interesting that instead of like, but because, you know, instead of like, oh, this has got to be so hard for you. Instead, he's like, I can't, don't you understand?
Yeah, because that's the kind of guy he is.
Yeah.
You know, he's not a touchy-feely guy. You know, he's just like a, come on, you know. Oh, my God. Favorite character? Lucas's little sister.
Wait, have you
seen many scenes with her yet?
When she's putting the cereal and she's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I've only seen like 2.
Oh, well, you've seen... And you've seen when she's making fun of him in his Halloween outfit.
Yes, where they're taking pictures
and she's like nerd. She's only in like she only has like 5 scenes.
She is very entertaining,
and it's hilarious. I like
8 is the one at the beginning of the series.
Right,
she's the one that makes the cop think that the bridge collapsed or whatever.
Right, the tunnel. I like that. And this isn't spoiling anything, really. I like that they don't mind offing some characters, I'll just say.
Okay.
And because in a show like this, it's tempting to just make it always like a happy ending.
Right.
And this episode or this season, you know...
It doesn't end well for everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, like what's interesting is the first season, it didn't end well, even without the second season, because at the very end of the season is when you see him throwing up the creature.
Right.
You also see 11 gone.
Right.
And the only hint, I mean, like, the point is even the first season doesn't end up super happy.
Right. This one doesn't either.
Yeah.
So let's go over some of the 80s stuff that I loved. Right. So you said arcades. What video games did we have in there?
They showed the Dragon's Quest. Dragon's Lair.
Did you play that back in the day?
So here is my story with Dragon's Lair. Because remember, I would have these intermittent visits to the States, right? The rest of the time I'm in Colombia. And the arcades in Colombia were predictably several years behind the arcades here. So I come over one summer and we go to Chuck E. Cheese for a birthday party. And I'm going through and I have that reaction that almost every kid must have had where I look over and I'm like, what the did they just skip 2 generations of games all of a sudden?
Yeah.
Especially because at the time I was already into programming. So I knew the capabilities of different systems and what they could do.
Right.
And I couldn't explain it. I'm like, how are they doing full cartoon graphics?
So for those that don't know, Dragon's Lair, and you see it at the beginning, it's the first season, the first scene that they have, I think, in the show. It was a video game, but it looked like a pristine Disney cartoon.
Because they had, which I didn't know at the time.
They just had different scenes.
They had basically animated exactly like a Disney cartoon. In fact, the main animator was an ex-Disney animator.
Right. And
they put it on a laser disc.
As the scene was, you know, the knight was running, you had to, at a precise moment, hit the controller a certain way, and then it would trigger the next scene in which he doesn't fall into the fiery pit.
Right. You know? It was choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
But with video, laser disc quality video.
Right.
But for someone, and so even though I was...
So that was the leap forward in technology, was the ability to trigger video very quickly.
Right. And I actually, but I didn't even know how they were doing it. Even though I was into computers, I certainly wouldn't have guessed immediately.
And they never, to my knowledge, made another video game like that.
They did make more, especially remember on in PCs, they had several video games that were like that were CD-ROM based.
I don't remember those,
but it seemed like a
one-off major game.
Yeah, because it wasn't fun.
Yeah, that was the thing. So did you play it back?
Yeah, and I immediately didn't like it.
Yeah, because it's so hard.
Well, it was hard.
Well, and you can't control. Basically, what happened, for those that don't know the game, it wasn't a game where you like
move the character.
Yeah, it wasn't like you had, like, if something was coming at the character and you dodged it with your controller, it didn't work that way.
No.
You had to memorize these button pushes and movements. Yeah. It wasn't necessarily intuitive to what you were being presented on screen. So you're basically memorizing a sequence, you know.
So in modern video games, when they have quick time events, as they're called, a lot of times they don't work well and gamers don't even like them. But when they do work well, like in Call of Duty 4, you will recall there were a few quick time events, not many, but a few. They're more contextual. So you're like, oh, I need to escape the helicopter crashing into my face or something. So it's coming on the right side. So I'm going to veer left. But even then, when it is contextual, oftentimes gamers don't like that kind of thing.
Right.
But back then, like you're saying, it wasn't even like that. It was random, and until you memorized it, it was not fun.
Yeah, I mean, there was even one scene where I think you have to jump on these different tiles, and like some of the tiles, you're going to fall through the floor, and some you don't.
And
there's no way to know. No. You just have to memorize it.
It's a quarter eater.
And it was 50 cents.
It was 50 cents.
At a time when almost no games were 50 cents.
Right.
So they had one of these at Factoria at the cinema. And my older brother, who had a job and had a lot of quarters, and was very into video games of this sort. Uh-huh. He got real good at Dragon's Lair.
Okay.
I think I played it once and was like, died instantly. And I was like, this isn't fun at all.
Well, and for me, because I was also a little younger than you guys, it actually didn't even make sense, because it took me too long to connect that what I was doing, that, you know, the whole like, oh, I'm going to have to memorize this. So the first couple times I played it, I'm like, I don't understand what just happened, but I just died.
Right, right. When I moved the stick, he didn't move.
Yeah, he didn't move.
He didn't move the way I wanted. Yeah, so my older brother became one of those guys who had played it so long, or had, I don't know how he figured it out. I don't know if he just played it over. I'm guessing he just played it over and over again, because he wouldn't be the sort of guy to subscribe to some gamer trade magazine or something, you know? And yeah, he memorized and was able to get through. Uh-huh. So that was one of the kind of cool things about the game, is when you got good at it and memorized it, you could play for a long time.
And if you were watching it, that was cool.
Yeah.
Because you could kind of see the story.
Because it looks like a real story. Yeah. And
that's, so my memory of that moment. So here I am in Colombia. I got a tandy color computer, and I'm learning how to program. And I've also gone to a computer lab at like the government building, where they have a Tandy 1000, which got better graphics. And I know what these systems can do. And then my friend has a Nintendo, and I know sort of what that system can do. And I go to this arcade, and I'm like, you look to one side, there's a monitor with a character that's like 10 pixels tall, like
Pac-Man.
And the other one. And then you look at this thing, and it's full screen graphics, full motion. And I have no idea how they're doing it.
Yeah.
So that's what initially blew my mind.
Yeah. Dig Dug. Did you ever play Dig Dug?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. That was a fun game, actually.
That was a very well-designed game.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it didn't get enough credit, because it was kind of after a lot of the other big games to come out, you know, Pac-Man and Space Invaders. I feel like Dig Dug, you could really play, once you got kind of the mechanics down, there was a skill to it.
Yeah, that was one that you felt more rewarded by getting better.
Right, right. high scores? What do you remember about getting? Were you a high score guy back in the day?
No, because I never had enough quarters, and yeah. B, never was around arcades long enough to get good at stuff.
Oh man, I was. There were certain games that I got good at back in 1984. One of them was Red Baron.
Oh, nice!
Which is like a line. It's a black and white line. Yeah. It was a flying game, and you know you tried to shoot down other.
You had a high score on that, and you were on the screen.
I think I would because not a lot of people played that game, and so when I played it, I would almost always get one of the high scores. I'll never forget one time. So Seattle Center at one time used to have an arcade.
Okay.
Like near the Space Needle, right? Yeah. There used to be they made like a new section for an arcade.
Okay.
And whenever we would go there, I would go to the arcade and I would play Red Baron. And one time I was playing so well, and there was enough, you know, Seattle Center people walk into the arcade, they might just do kind of a walkthrough. You know, they might not necessarily be playing it. And over time a crowd, you know, like developed behind me as I was.
Oh, nice.
And my 13-year-old self just, you know,
just like Tron.
Just like in Tron, right? I just wanted to be like Jeff Bridges in Tron with like a crowd behind you, like cheering.
Right.
So high score on that. I would get high score in Galaga. I still do actually sometimes.
For me, I always had a crowd around me going, "Hurry up and die."
So yeah, looking for coins in the couch. Do you remember?
No, like again, mine was like, here's your 2 quarters. No, like I just had a very different experience about this, but I guess I remember feeling so special when I would get to play on an arcade machine. Because it was rare, and it was like, so in Colombia, there was this one place we would go to every now and then for lunch on a Saturday, and they had the sit-down cabinets, some of the ones like Galaga and Pac-Man. And so that was such a treat, because I'd be waiting and I wouldn't say anything because I didn't want to jinx it. And then my grandpa would be like, "Do you want a couple quarters for whatever Colombian coins it would cost?"
And, oh, really?
And so I'd be like, "Oh, yes!" And it was so awesome. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I think I was a bit luckier than you, as you described. Cause I feel like all I did from 82 to 85 is, you know, play. Like, we went to Chuck E. Cheese all the time.
I think if you were anywhere in the middle class in this country at that age, you were probably getting quite a bit of arcade time.
Yeah. Other 80s things like the curtains and the furniture are just spot on. The Reagan Bush versus Mondale Ferraro thing.
Oh, right. Mondale, yeah. Who's the one that has the Mondale sign?
Dustin Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was very accurate, too, because even people that you might think are on the liberal side of things still had a Reagan Bush because that election was one of the biggest landslides, maybe the biggest landslide ever. I mean, I think it was maybe the last time that Washington and California and Oregon went Republican. You know what I mean? Yeah. Imagine Washington State, like voting Republican majority for
this. Was a lot of it had to do with the oil crisis, right? Because the economy was in the pits.
Well, so this is 84. So this is,
re-election.
Yeah. This is Reagan's re-election.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. I was thinking from Jimmy. Okay, got it.
The prevailing thing at this point was the evil empire, the Russians and nuclear war. And Reagan was a very, you know, he's a tough guy in that way. Mondale Ferraro, the first female vice president, candidate, which was a big deal at the time.
Interesting.
Piggy banks. Banana seats on bikes. So their bicycles, same as last season, was their bikes are so stupid, you know. But I had the exact same bike. It was a style thing where you had these really tall kind of chopper style handlebars, and then you had this banana seat bike that was designed, I'm guessing, so that you could have 2 people on the bike if you wanted to.
I guess.
But you never really did that.
This was this was before the bike tech really came in.
Right. So around that time was when BMX bike.
Right.
And you had to have the small little seat and like the perfect everything. Yeah. Radio Shack reminds me of the 80s.
Right.
Trapper Keepers.
So Radio Shack makes me really sad because I loved Radio Shack.
Oh, yeah. Dude, as musicians and recording artists.
Right.
And computer people.
Yes. Oh,
like,
my God.
Radio Shack would have like that one whole like section, wing, man, where it was just all connectors.
And their catalog. Oh, I would drool over the catalog so much. You know, I'd see all the little, remember the Armatron robot?
Yeah.
The little arm that you could, I got that one for Christmas one time and I had picked it out from the catalog and I remember all their little keyboards. They had the Casio keyboards and all the things listed and I loved Radio Shack.
Remember how in the 80s how they would take breaks during podcasts?
Oh.
Let's take a break. All right, we're back from the break. If you haven't become a patron of the podcast, do so now. Go to patreon.com, become a patron, and you get access to a bunch of our premium episodes. And also, we tend to answer your questions more if you're a patron. Also, buy my new book, which I just published, called Multi-Role Clinical Supervision.
Should they buy multi-copies of it?
Yes, they should, actually. I'm obsessively checking on Amazon to see how many people have bought my book, and so far, 4 people have bought my book.
What? That means I haven't bought it. I better buy it.
You don't need to buy it.
What? I'll buy your book.
So, 2 people a day. So, 2 people the first day and 2 people the second day.
I mean, that is a niche book. So, 4 people.
It's a very niche book.
4 very interested people.
But honestly, I would imagine that if you are a listener to the podcast, there's enough. If you like most of the episodes of this podcast, I'm going to guess that even if you're not a clinician, you might like this book.
I actually read some of your book, and I got to say, the podcast had a more clear reason why we were caring from the beginning, whereas in the book, it was a little unclear where it was going, and the monster was a little bit vague.
The monster was vague?
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought the monster. Also, tell a friend about the podcast. Spread the word. Join the Facebook fan group. Also, note that we have a live event in Seattle at Antioch University.
Yay!
January 27, 2018. Please attend that. We have people traveling. Famous patron Lyndon is actually flying out from Ireland.
That's so exciting.
Also, just be a good person because you should be. So, other kinds of 80s stuff. John Carpenter style synth score. Yeah, that's one thing that I hope that people really understand is like the music and the title sequence and everything is a direct homage ripoff of John Carpenter.
Yes, so good.
And so when you hear that thing, you should be like, the Duffer Brothers are riffing on John Carpenter. This is not like the Stranger Things style in a lot of ways can be attributed to John Carpenter, and they are sure to credit him. But I worry that people don't understand that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I worry that they're going to, like, I'm worried that in 10 years, someone will
Duffer style.
someone will do an homage of Stranger Things and it'll be like, oh, this is like Duffers. Yeah. And I'm like, no.
Duffer style.
Yeah. If you want to watch good examples of that, you know, Escape from New York, The Thing, which is one of my favorite movies, Starman, these kinds of movies.
And then also, I feel like there's a lot of, well, of course, there's a lot of influences. And Stephen King is, or I should say Stephen King movies are also influencing parts of that.
Yeah. Spielberg is also a major influence. E.T., Poltergeist, The Goonies.
Yeah.
Gremlins, obviously Ghostbusters, Terminator, Stand By Me. On the TV, we see a lot of TV shows. Do you remember any of the TV shows that we see?
Oh, she does watch a lot, but now I'm sort of like spacing on that.
We see Cheers.
We see
Punky Brewster. Do you remember the Punky Brewster?
Well, first of all, I never watched either of those shows.
Oh, really?
Which I know is sort of, like, I know a lot of people love Cheers. I saw it playing often, and so I roughly know what it's about. I definitely know the song. I just never really watched it. And Punky Brewster, I know what it is, but I also didn't watch it.
I think Punky Brewster was geared more toward younger people, so I don't think I saw it. What? Family Feud, All My Children, Mr. Mom. The only...
I don't know how I didn't catch any of those.
Well, Mr. Mom Have you reached the... you must have, where they're like, let's watch a movie, and he's like, let's watch Mr.
Yeah.
Mom.
No, now I remember that scene. It's just with... what's his name? Batman.
Yeah.
I never watched that movie.
Oh, it's a great movie, Mr. Mom.
So I feel like the ones they picked are the ones I never watched.
All My Children is the only soap I ever watched.
There, I never watched All My Children.
There was a summer in college when I took a class that I had a couple hours of break in between classes, and I would walk back to my apartment, and I was like, what am I going to do during that time? It's not enough time to do anything. And so I was like, well, maybe I'll watch a soap opera. So All My Children was on at noon, I think. And I got really into it. You know, I watched, cause that's the magic of soap operas, is like, you have to watch, you have to keep up with it.
Well, okay. But answer me this, because, and I noticed the same was true in Latin America and everything. There were soap operas where, I knew as a kid, only meaning I, like my grandma watched it, or maybe it was on or whatever. And then years went by, and I'm talking to someone and they mentioned the soap opera. I'm like, oh, I remember that back in the day. It's like, what do you mean? It's still playing. And I'm like, yeah. Wait, what? And then I'll watch a little bit. And I'm like, but that's the same freaking plot from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
How do they not make forward progress?
Yeah, I mean, that's the magic, is that they just inch forward.
Yeah.
these epic plot lines, you know. Also, E.T. is referenced in Eleven's costume when she has the you know, the ghost outfit. And also, after your point, there's another E.T. reference of like the Reese's Pieces thing. The Thing is referenced quite a bit with the flamethrower.
Right.
You have Indiana Jones. I don't think you've reached this part yet, but
no, he grabs the hat.
Oh, okay. So you've seen that part. Farrah Fawcett hairspray. I don't think you're at that point yet.
I don't think so.
So Steve tells Dustin, you know, there's a Steve Dustin.
Oh yeah. The
buddy.
The little love interest.
Yeah. Well, the buddy.
Dude, that was more than buddies. They had a nice little shower scene together.
Steve starts giving advice to Dustin on how to do hair.
Are they brothers?
No.
Are they co-workers?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying.
Just saying. Also, Bob's video camera, which is the same model as the one owned by Doc Brown in Back to the Future.
Oh, really? That's a nice homage there.
Yeah. Now, that part actually pulled me out of it a little bit, because in 1984, although maybe that video camera existed then, the average person, I guess Bob worked at Radio Shack.
He's
so maybe
an extreme.
But to me, that sort of pulled me out of it a little bit, because my dad had a video camera and he bought it in 1982, I think. And the video camera he bought in 82, we were still using as a family in 84.
Yeah.
And we were one of the only people we knew in the entire town who had a video camera.
And it was it had the big cassettes, right?
Big cassettes.
Yeah.
Not only big cassettes, but you had to carry the VCR with you on your, in a satchel.
Okay.
And the camera, you didn't put the tape in the camera.
Oh, really?
The tape in the camera, that camera became widespread like around 1990 or something. So even though this JVC camera was available during this time.
Like my mom had a video camera with the tape in the camera at around 88.
Right. So it was around that time. And so it kind of pulled me out a little bit, because I'm like, that camera feels more advanced.
Because they were smaller tapes in there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Not only was it in the camera, but it was a smaller tape.
So they might have had them, but they would have been like
so
elite,
expensive.
Elite. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, anyway, it's just one of those small things. He-Man action figure we see. Max's trick-or-treating costume. She's Jason Voorhees Halloween.
When did we see the He-Man? I'm trying to remember.
There's a He-Man action figure.
Early on?
Yeah, I think in Finn's house when he's putting stuff for the yard sale.
Okay, so did I ever tell you about my He-Man experience?
No.
So I'm in Colombia, and of course I've not heard of He-Man. And one day, my aunt comes to pick me up from my house, because every other weekend I would go to my grandma's house. And she picks me up, and she's like, oh, you should see your mom sent some toy for you. And I'm like, really? Like, yeah. And it's like, you press these buttons or something and like the muscles move. And I'm like, what? Really? It's like, yeah, it's like all the muscles move or something. And so in my head, I was imagining some sort of weird kind of robot thing or something where like you push buttons and muscles move. And then I get there and it's Man at Arms.
Yeah.
Now, of course, I loved it and I was like, what? But I was like, oh, this is amazing. Okay. Where's the other one? Which one? The one where the muscles move. It's like, no, this is the one. And I'm like, wait, what? The muscles move? I think they meant because his torso could turn and the arms could move.
Yeah.
And he was buff. And, you know, think of like an aunt back in the mid 80s where like she's never seen something like this, right? Yeah. So she's like, I don't know, the muscles move.
Yeah.
So, but I was like, I was so blown away. First, I was disappointed because I'm like, where's the muscle moving doll?
Yeah.
But then I'm like, what is it? And it comes with like the armor. Remember the orange armor and the club? And it came with a little comic book.
Oh.
And I was like, it was a little thin, little square comic book. And it had the story where a merman comes out of the water and attacks He-Man. And I was like, oh my God, what is this?
Wow. Oh.
And on the back of the comic book, of course, they had the action figure, the other ones you could buy.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I want that one. I want that one. I want that one. I want that one. I want that one.
Yeah, that show was so blatantly figure oriented.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see the show till much later.
I watched the show when I was in eighth grade every day after school. Like, me and my friend, we'd walk home and we'd go to his house and flip on the TV and He-Man would be on.
By the power of Grayskull.
Yeah. The Halloween costumes, other Halloween costumes. Did you know what Steve and Nancy went as?
I'm trying to remember. I don't remember.
So it's kind of hard to tell, and I didn't recognize it.
Can you give
me
a hint? Because I'm trying to...
It's hard to tell.
It's when she was getting drunk.
Yeah. So okay. Steve is... It's from Risky Business.
Oh,
so
Steve, I wouldn't have caught
right,
that.
So Steve is Tom Cruise, and Nancy is going as the prostitute.
Okay.
Madonna, one of the girls at the party is dressed up as Madonna from Like a Virgin, Flashdance, Susie and the Banshees, Cobra Kai, Johnny from Karate Kid.
I did see that.
Yeah.
Cobra Kai, which that would have been fresh because that just came out that year.
Karate Kid?
Yeah, 84.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Huh. Also, you have Sean Astin, who is in the Goonies, right?
Right.
You have Paul Reiser, who was in Aliens. You know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I totally forgot about that.
And that's like, there's a total...
You know, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in fact, he has... I mean, he is ultimately not a good guy, but he is more ambiguous, I should say.
Right. Just than, like in Aliens, yeah. You have... Carrie is sort of referenced. I don't know, but when Nancy dumps the red juice on her.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I actually thought of that. I was like, that's like Carrie.
Yeah. Poltergeist, when they're staring at the static at the TV.
Yes.
I also keep saying Under the Skin, even though that's not 80s, but it was just like 4 or 5 years ago. Scarlett Johansson.
Oh.
There's this...
I don't think I saw
There's
that.
This scene when they go to the black... when Eleven goes into the black room, you know, with the water on the ground, it's like a direct ripoff from Under the Skin. The words they use, totally tubular.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember that kind of stuff. Like, I don't think I knew what totally tubular meant until 20 years later. But I did say that in the 80s.
It was surfing, right?
It
was like you're in a tube.
Right.
You're surfing in a little wave tube.
Right. And then surfers started saying about other things, oh my God, that's
totally
tubular. Because they love tubes.
Gnarly was skating, right? Ice, or like roller skating, I mean.
You mean skateboarding?
What did I just... Oh my God. Or was Gnarly still surfing and the skateboarders?
I don't know. But okay. I'm guessing it was surfing. Yeah, you know, for those that don't know and weren't around, for some weird reason, in the early, mid-80s, beach culture and surfing culture had been completely, you know, spread throughout the entire United States.
Like every 80s TV show around then had one or several episodes with the beach, you know?
Yeah. And it's like a very small minority of places in the United States you can even surf. One.
Right.
And two, very small percentage of people who live in those neighborhoods surf.
Yeah.
And very small percentage of those surfers talk and act like a surfer, you know?
But all our clothes were surf related.
Yeah, we had board OP. Shorts, OP, Ocean Pacific. We had Breezin.
Town and Country.
Yeah, and we used surfer slang. I mean, it was such a weird thing. Like, why would anyone say totally to me?
And we wore those shorts, right? The board shorts.
Yeah.
The-
and we would have, we had shirts that had surfboards on them and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd never, I still to this day, I've never touched, you know.
Yet I had so many of those.
Three Musketeers was a big, you know, candy bar at the time.
Oh, I was talking about that with a buddy of mine because we both remembered the, first of all, it was my favorite candy bar.
Really?
Later it became Snickers, but at that age, that time, it was definitely Three Musketeers.
Huh. And yeah, Snickers is a far superior candy bar. And Butterfinger too.
Later it became a first. But I remembered the white wrapper.
Yeah.
Because nowadays it's silver.
Right. Now all wrappers are really complex.
Yeah.
And that wrapper is so simple.
Yeah, it's white with a little three.
Because I don't even think back then you needed to put the ingredients on the wrapper.
You're probably right, yeah.
You know, and definitely not the not the calorie
count. No, nothing, no.
There are some D&D references, True Sight, which is a spell, and Mind Flayer.
Right.
Mind Flayer is like a major D&D monster that you fight. And as a D&D player myself, I've actually had entire campaigns designed around Mind Flayers.
Nice.
Also, Aliens is kind of referenced in that when they get sucked into the wall and they're, you know, like when mm-hmm. Hopper is, you know, getting trapped, it's sort of like when in Aliens when the goo kind of...
Right.
Also, I thought about A-Team when they were outfitting, or when it, you haven't been there yet, but there's sort of a montage, where they have to like outfit a bus, you know?
Okay.
Jurassic Park is also the clever girl bit happens eventually. Mm. And I wish I could talk about the last episode because there's a very 80s thing that happens there. Mm. Well, God, it's not spoiling because you don't know who's going to make it, but let's just talk about school dances.
Okay.
Did you have a snowball at all?
No. Was that a winter ball or something?
Oh, okay. So you don't know what a snowball is. So,
I mean, think about it. We don't have snow in Columbia.
Yeah. Well, and Seattle, we didn't have much either. But
and in Tacoma, my school had... Tolo, homecoming, prom, that sort of it.
Actually, wait. I am so old now, I am forgetting my 80s stuff. Yeah, we didn't have a snowball either. What we did have, that's so funny. So we would, once or twice a year, when we were in like the third, fourth, fifth grade, as a whole entire grade, we would go to Skate King.
Oh, okay.
Which is it's a skating rink.
Sure.
And you, for those that maybe are outside the country and don't know, it's like you play music like modern rock music and, you know, pop music. And there, it's like a disco, but instead of dancing, you skate in a circle.
Right.
And it's like an ice skating rink, but for roller skates. And it was the four, not the inline skating, but the full four, you know, four by four.
Oh, okay.
And there was always one moment in which the DJ would say, it's snowball time.
Really?
It's the snowball. And all the girls would line up on the far wall.
Okay.
Every single girl in the entire venue.
Okay.
Every single girl would line up on the skating rink on one side. Mm-hmm. And then the guys were supposed to skate around and like pick one of the girls, and you would hold their hand. And you would skate during the song.
Okay.
So it'd be a love song like, reunited because it feels so good, you know. And the thing was only about five guys would actually
do it.
Like
oh no.
80 guys would just vacate.
Oh my God.
They would just go play video games during that song.
Oh.
Every single girl
was there lining, waiting. Oh.
And if you were one of the five guys, you had you could pick whoever you wanted.
Oh my God. What a social dynamic.
And it wasn't like a dance where people turned you down either. It's just like, if you picked someone, right, you know, they
would do it.
They'd do it, you know? And so,
although maybe it's because the only guys that stayed around are the kind of guys that wouldn't get turned down.
But yeah, so I was mixing that up. But anyway,
well, because as we've talked about before, the social dynamic in Colombia is so different, because at dance, everyone dances, and you're just expected to ask, you know, everyone's dancing with each other.
Yeah, and it's like not because I've done salsa dancing, and right, and the expectation is not like, as a woman, as a female, if you say yes to a guy, you're not saying you like him.
Yes. There's no like, okay, fine, let's go dating. No, it's like, I'm dancing with you right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that multiple times throughout the night with almost everyone.
Yeah.
And it means nothing more than that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it might, but it might not. It,
yeah.
You know, whereas in the States, when you ask someone to dance, it meant something. Although I will say, when I was a kid, and we had a very different, very positive dance culture, mm-hmm, when I was in 7th to 8th, you know, when all high school, middle school times, in that for our grade, but like the grade above us and the grade below us wasn't like this, in which we had that culture. We wouldn't dance very well,
dance,
but you would just ask,
yeah,
every girl you knew.
Right.
And they would be like, sure. You know,
yeah.
And it was, and everyone danced. Like, there was very few people who weren't dancing.
Uh-huh.
So there was always a matchup. Do you know what I mean?
Right, right.
And you would dance with your friends. Like, I remember, right, dancing with girls who I was just friends with,
right,
you know, and we would have a great time, and that was that. You know, it didn't mean anything. And,
right.
And whereas other grades, they would, most people were sitting, or they wouldn't even go to the dance, you know? Anyway.
No, I totally remember that dynamic in dances here in the U.S.
Like, no one goes.
Or, because I would always go, because I liked dancing, and mostly it was me, a few friends that we all liked dancing. We'd be in the middle dancing, but there would be a lot of people not dancing.
Right. All right, so let's talk about some of the bad things. So, you haven't seen episode 7 yet.
Yeah, I saw it with you, and it was so great, and we're waiting for episode 8.
You've seen up through episode 5.
5, yes.
I hated episode 7.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to spoil anything.
Yeah, sure.
But I will say that it felt like a bad Heroes episode.
Let me ask you, is it, without spoiling it, is it because out of character, or is it like a contrived thing, or is it like
one, episode 7 could basically be taken out of the season,
okay,
and you wouldn't miss anything.
Oh, okay.
It's like a
filler.
Well, I know what they were trying to do with the story, but it's basically just about one character.
Okay.
And like I said, it has nothing to do with the plot.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with the main plot. And it was directed by someone who hadn't directed any of the other episodes.
Oh, I see.
And it's super cliche.
Okay.
And it feels different. It looks different. It's written differently. And I looked online. Everyone hates it.
Oh, wow. That's okay. I'll be on the lookout for that.
And it's just, it's so bad. It is so dumb. And I mean, I was watching, I was like, okay, let's, you know, I'll try to make this work. And I'm binging in 2 nights. I love this show.
It's not like you're giving it the benefit of the doubt 3 weeks later. It's through that marathon.
Yeah. And I'm like 15 minutes and I'm like, okay, you know, let's see. And I'm like, something doesn't feel right. And then about like, you know, 16 minutes in, I'm like, this episode is stupid. And then through that lens, I'm like, every scene, I'm like, oh my God, what?
It's
maybe
like
what?
How I felt about the bees episode in Black Mirror.
Right.
Which is, by the way, not as bad as the first episode of the series.
Right.
Oh, and did I tell you? I don't think I did. I was recently in San Francisco for my brother's birthday, and we were at a dinner. And the topic of Black Mirror came up. And I was geeking out with a couple of people who were like, oh, such an amazing show, blah, blah. And then, and I think I said, or maybe they said, and of course, our favorite, the first episode with the pig. And I'm like, oh, and then I briefly considered not saying anything because, you know, I'm just, but I couldn't. I'm like, no, see, that's my least favorite episode. And so because we had been totally like seeing eye to eye, and all of a sudden, it was the scene where the DJ scratches the record and the music comes to a stop.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Like, I've been in similar conversations.
So was this like that, where you were watching the series and all of a sudden, what just happened?
Yeah. And then I was like, I can't wait for this episode to be over.
That
sucks. And then as soon as that episode was over and episode 8 begins, within like 30 seconds, I'm like, okay, we're back. And episode 8 and 9 are really good. You know, they're like very good episodes. And so I knew then that episode 7 really stank because I'm like emotional. You know, if a series loses you,
right,
then I was like, well, is this going to taint later episodes? But episode 8, like right away, I was like, okay, this feels like Stranger Things again.
So it was really like they took a chance with a guest director or whatever, and it was like not good.
You tell me when you.
But
see
it was
this.
More than the. It was the writing too.
Like it was everything.
Yeah.
The writing, the acting, the set design, the characters, the choice, the
weird.
I mean, there was the story.
I wonder
if they reduced that whole episode down to like one scene in one episode, then I would have been okay with it because there is sort of a story beat for one of the characters where they develop a little bit. You know,
that must be such a hard thing with a series because in a movie. You could cut a half hour from a long movie and still have a movie.
Yeah.
Imagine that, right? You could have this whole half hour where you're like, none of that works.
Let's take it out.
And certainly, you know, these epic long movies that they film 4 hours and they end up being an hour and a half or whatever. But in a series, if that episode didn't work, you have to like go shoot a whole other episode?
Yeah.
Like that's crazy.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what the Duffer Brothers were thinking. I think what I want to think is the Duffer Brothers handed the episode over, but at the same time they wrote it. So
they wrote it. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I assume
that's anyway, weird.
Other bad things. The Billy character I thought was a little over the top.
Wait, which one's Billy?
Billy is the total asshole.
Oh, the Camaro dude.
Yeah, like his character is like. A little
from the start. Yeah. He walks out and all the girls are like, who is that?
Yeah, it's a little cartoonish. Yeah. I mean, the Steve character, the bully in episode
was more
or
bully.
In season one, when he was being a bully, it was more understandable.
Yeah.
You know, but the Billy character is like, what's going on with this guy?
Well, and initially, and I guess I don't know how better it gets, but even up to where I'm at, the red hair, the girl?
Max.
Oh, yeah, Mad Max. She also seems a bit cartoony.
Yeah, people have been saying that. I don't agree. I think she... I like her. I like the way she's written. I like the way she's acted.
I guess I'm saying it from this perspective. One, initially it was sort of like the tough girl, right? Okay, fine. But then... she's being treated like crap. Okay, actually, no, she finally did say something now that I think about it. She's like, all you guys do is treat me like crap and blah, blah, blah. And then she's like, no, I'm out. But I guess it took, I was feeling like it was taking too long for her to get to that point.
Yeah.
Like, are you really this unpopular that you can't just say, screw these guys, I'm going home? Because like she was being treated really lame.
Yeah.
Okay, and then finally, what's the black kid's name?
Lucas.
Lucas finally brought her in, and then she's like, you got to try it better. That's a stupid story.
That guy at the arcade is hilarious.
Oh, yeah. And that's a person, like, if you've hung around the tech, the arcade, that's a person you know.
Other things I didn't like were, he says KFC. So there's... I don't know.
Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Yeah. Are you at that point yet where they have KFC at that one person's house?
You think I saw that.
Yeah.
But is it not... Did you not say KFC back then?
No, we called it Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Okay.
KFC was like, I don't know...
90s.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah.
Also, they used, again, the word douchebag to make fun of someone.
Oh, that was not a word.
Right. They did that in season one.
Yeah.
Douchebag started being used... like 10 years ago, you know, maybe 15. Like that is a very recent insult. Yeah. So I didn't like that. And I just sort of chalked that up to the Duffer Brothers have done a lot of their, because they were born in 1984. So what do they know about 1984?
Oh, that's true. They're not 70s born.
Right.
Right.
And so they did they've done a lot of research,
sure,
obviously, because they have nailed the look. Because one of the things that I said when we reviewed season one is that whenever they make an 80s movie, mm-hmm, like set in the 80s, they'll always, like, every furniture thing is 80s, every clothing is 80s, every car is 80s. But the thing about it is, in the 80s,
it was 70s.
Was 70s, yeah. Because not a lot of people had new curtains in 1984. You bought your curtains, right, 10 years ago.
Right.
Your furniture was bought 15 years ago.
Right.
Your car was bought, you know, 10 years ago. So everything in 19, so, and that's what they do really well in Stranger Things is when you look at the decor,
yeah,
a lot of it is 70s.
And that's why it feels 80s. That's
right.
A good point.
Yeah. Right. I also see, they didn't explain, the scientist sort of explanation is a little confusing to me, actually. I won't go into that too much. Anyway. So let's take a break and then let's talk about the music. What do you say, Berto?
Let's do it.
All right, we're back from the break talking about Stranger Things season 2. So let's just talk about the music here. What do you remember? Any of the songs? There's a lot of great music in season 2 from 1984.
No, but I like it.
You got "Whip It Good" by Devo.
When did they do that one?
First episode there in the arcade.
Oh, is that what was playing?
And then you got "Just Another Day" by Oingo Boingo.
Oh yeah,
"Just Another Day." It's just another day. You got "Talking in Your Sleep" by the Romantics.
Oh, that's right. I see.
No,
what is it? I see. No, I hear the secrets that you keep when talking you're talking
in your sleep.
Yeah.
"Rock You Like a Hurricane." That's Billy's.
Rock You Like a. Is that when he shows up?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
You got Ghostbusters, obviously.
Right.
Like one episode ends with the
Ray
Ghostbusters.
Parker Jr.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, by the way, do you remember he got sued by Huey Lewis?
Right.
And lost. So the story was they wanted Huey to make the song for Ghostbusters, but he had to pass because of, maybe it was because he was working on the Back to the Future stuff or whatever, but whatever reason he passed. And so then they found this other dude, Ray Parker Jr., and they're like, can you make it sound like Huey? And so they did, but too much. And so it's "I Want a New Drug," that riff.
Yeah,
and so they got sued.
Interesting. I always thought that in my head I mixed that whole story up to Huey Lewis wrote that song and Ray Parker Jr. just performed it.
I see. Well, and what's weirder is they'd settled out of court, or they settled in some way, but part of it was they wouldn't talk about it. But Huey talked about it many years later on like a VH1 or something like that. And then Ray Parker Jr. sued him.
We got "Shout at the Devil" by Motley Crue at the Halloween party. Shout at the devil. Shout.
Right.
Shout. You got "Islands in the Stream."
Islands in the Stream.
So I was talking.
That is what we
You know
are.
Brant? You know Brant?
Yeah, of course.
So he's 31, 32. And we were talking about music and stuff. Did you know he was that young?
Well, no. I'm now realizing. Because in my mind, he's still like early 20s.
Oh, no.
Because I met him like 7 years ago or 8 years ago.
Yeah, you met him in his early 20s. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So Brant is the bassist in my band, and he's 32 or 31 or something. And he and I were talking about music, and I brought up Kenny Rogers. Mm-hmm. And he's like, "Who's Kenny Rogers?"
Oh, no.
And I was like, isn't that interesting that, because he knows a shit ton about music.
Sure.
And I thought, how interesting it is that he doesn't know about Kenny Rogers.
How does someone not know, right?
And so I had to like show him some popular songs that I thought he might have heard. And the only one he had heard is the chorus of "No Wind Fold 'Em, No Wind to Hold 'Em." You know, but Kenny Rogers was one of the biggest stars of the 70s.
Oh, yeah. And early 80s.
And early 80s.
I mean, the freaking We Are the World, he played a big role in that song.
It's just interesting to me what things get fetishized about a period in time and what things get completely forgotten.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
Like, everyone knows who Madonna is, and everyone knows
like
who
Lionel Richie is another one.
Yeah.
I bet you a lot of people nowadays, except maybe if they watched that show with his daughter 20 years ago, 15 years ago.
Right.
But mostly, they probably don't know who Lionel Richie was.
Right.
And he was like the biggest thing for a while.
Yeah. And he, well, for a long time. I mean, he had hit the after Commodores hit after hit. I think he still has the record for the amount of,
Grammys.
Grammys won in one year. He won like 10 Grammys.
It's
crazy. Yeah. He was, you know, arguably, aside from Michael Jackson and Madonna, maybe the biggest star. Yeah. And how many 32-year-olds today know any Lionel Richie song other than Hello,
and only
is it me you're looking for? You know,
only because they might have heard like that Adele song sounded similar to some old song by some old dude.
Well, and it's a song that's made fun of a lot.
You know,
there's a lot of memes.
That's true. Yeah.
Anyway, Monster Mash when they're trick or treating.
Monster Mash.
And do you remember the Duran Duran song during the Halloween party?
Let me think.
Girls on Film.
Did they have that?
Girls on, yeah.
When she's getting drunk?
Yeah.
Oh.
Also, Go by Tones on Tail, which I could sing for you, but I'm forgetting exactly
that.
The Ghost in You was by Psychedelic Furs when Jonathan and Nancy are together. Psychedelic Furs, great. Just I loved them, still love them. I had one of their cassette tapes. This is Radio Clash. Yeah, wasn't that one of your favorite bands?
I love them. I still have. I don't have a lot of physical CDs left in my life, but that's one of them.
Hammer to Fall by Queen. That's a great song.
Oh yes.
Blue Bayou, Roy Orbison. Round and Round, Rat. When Billy is working out. Runaway, or I might be actually beyond.
Sure.
Runaway is definitely episode 7. You have again the Runaways, Dead End Justice, Whispers to a Scream, Whisper to a Scream by the Icicle Works.
I don't know.
One hit wonder. Metallica, Four Horsemen. Should I Stay or Should I Go by the Clash again.
Oh yes, good song.
The Way We Were, Barbra Streisand. Love is a Battlefield, Pat Benatar. Twist of Fate, Olivia Newton-John. Time After Time, Cyndi Lauper. Every Breath You Take by The Police. So the final song is Every Breath You Take. That's not a spoiler, but the final thing you hear is The Police singing Every Breath You Take. Okay, so let's talk about the psychology. There's not a ton of psychology, but I thought, you know, there's some things you could mention. There's a lot of bullying themes, you know. You have... So eventually you learn more of Billy's backstory.
Right.
And you perhaps learn why he's such a bully.
Right. And I imagined. And I also, I mean, I saw the scene where they're playing basketball and he tries to actually give him advice.
Yeah.
He gives Steve advice.
Advice, yeah.
And so I'm like, okay. So he's the bully with a heart of gold.
Well, so they don't really go much into any of that. There's a scene where you're like, oh, I get why Billy is such a dick, essentially. So they depict that, I think, pretty well, what it feels like to be bullied and all that kind of stuff.
It was just like one of these things where, well, first of all, when they're in the shower, Steve's actually bigger than the other guy. Yeah. But also, that was like one thing I liked because one of the guys is sort of, I don't know if bullying is the word, but he's definitely teasing Steve about, oh, your girl was with such and such, blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
And Billy doesn't really dogpile on that. He just sort of like ignores it and then says something else. So I actually liked that because I thought, okay, so they're not just following the script from the first season. They're trying a different dynamic here.
Yeah. Also, you get a sense for what it's like to be an outcast when Will is zombie boy and everything.
Yes.
Like that happens a lot. You also, having to make your child suffer. So you'll see this later on in the season, but you know, Will and his and the his mom, what his mom has to do to help Will is something that I'm guessing a lot of parents who have to take their kids to chemotherapy or something feel. You know, there's a lot of
Because at the end of the episode, I saw they're using the fire on the stuff, and Will is going into some severe. I mean, it doesn't even look human.
Right,
he's starting to like, and on that related theme, Hopper is forcing her to stay for her own good. Eleven,
right,
and is so like. Like, no, you can't go out. You can't go out. And she's like, when can I go out?
Right. So it's like, you know, what it's like to raise a teenager.
Yeah.
Very analogous to that. Also, Dustin and D'Artagnan, there's a fair amount of psychology there as well in terms of, well, you just have to watch the rest. There's what we call an anniversary effect. So this is exactly 1 year later, and there's... The psychiatrist talks about, oh, it's an anniversary effect. He's not actually, you know, it's because that's a legitimate psychological phenomenon.
Interesting.
A year after an event, you are reminded of.
Because the same sort of things are happening. It's the same month, maybe same holidays coming up.
Right. Like you could imagine if your mom dies around Thanksgiving,
right,
then every Thanksgiving kind of reminds you of that. The psychiatrist being unethical with research. I've done episodes on unethical psychiatric research, psychological research. Also, electric shock, you saw that bit. They actually used proper terminology. 450 is the max level. But it is inaccurate in that you can't cause the effect we see in her from electroshock therapy.
I see.
You know, I don't know anything that would cause that effect, honestly. So you might cause memory loss. You might cause brain damage, but not what she's going through. Like, that's a very sort of Duffer Brothers invention. Okay, so next season. Do you know anything about the next season?
Not at all.
So there is definitely a third and a fourth and talks of a fifth.
What? They're already? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
They're planning far in advance.
Yeah. And I'm hoping to God that it's not anything like episode 7. And I'm worried that the reason why they made episode 7 was to sort of set up future.
No.
You know, so I don't know. But the Duffer brothers have said that every season is going to time jump a year, not only because they kind of like that
kids.
Convention, but also the kids are growing up.
Yeah.
And so they have to.
Harry Potter.
Yeah.
By the way, what a brilliant way to write it, right? Like, she wrote every book 1 year, you know?
Yeah.
Like, meaning, like, each book took place in one school year. So then
they
were sort of able to keep up with the, you know.
Right.
It was evident towards the last few movies. They're like, they're not in high school anymore. But
they said, the Duffer Brothers said that we'll definitely be seeing more of the mind flayer.
Okay.
Season 3 will further explore the mythology of the Upside Down, but they say don't expect any clear answers. They also want to focus more on character development. Their quote here is, it's not necessarily going to be bigger in scale. What I'm really excited about is giving these characters an interesting journey to go on. So it sounds like the Upside Down will be involved.
Interesting.
And maybe... Like,
maybe they have to be in there for a while,
right? Maybe it's like you have a few of them who are, you know, going on a quest in the Upside Down or just something. In my head, it's probably not going to be like season 1 and 2 where there's a lot of characters doing a lot of things.
The one thing that I'm sort of sad about when I first watched the first episode
of season 2.
Of season 1, I thought this was going to be, how do I put it, a more of a variety show. Like, you know, in the vein of Twilight Zone or the old ones, you know, or the out, what was it, the out?
Out. Oh, yeah.
Right? That thing.
Yeah, the out one.
Right. So I thought, I was like, oh, maybe it's going to be like that. where
Outer Limits.
Outer Limits, yeah. Where I was thinking, you know, first or maybe the first season or maybe the first part was going to be about one thing, but then there was going to be another mystery.
Right, because Stranger Things sounds right. like a Black Mirror concept.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
But instead, it seems like it's all the same thing. And so what I'm concerned about is if it never leads somewhere or concludes and then a new thing starts, that could be a problem. Like if it just never evolves.
That's what it sounds like it's going to be. But yeah, that would have been interesting if they could have done season two about a different Stranger Thing, you know?
Yeah. Which is, I was thinking it was the modern version of those kinds of tales of from the crypt, you know? Stranger Tales.
But at this point, it's sort of like Game of Thrones in that you're so interested in some of these characters, you know? And so I think it's a smart move to try to go even deeper into some of these characters, you know?
I guess one thing that I was...
But I have very low expectations given, I mean, Duffer Brothers are great and they seem to really understand how to not piss me off other than episode 7. So maybe it'll be good, but it's going to be hard to sustain a third, fourth, and fifth season of this episode.
Especially like, here's what I don't want to see over and over and over. Will, what's wrong with Will?
So I've heard that that's not going to happen.
Good.
because they recognize, I think smartly, that it's like...
Fool me once.
You know, the 24 deal where it's like his daughter always gets kidnapped.
Right.
It's like eventually you got to do something else.
Like, oh, God damn it. They got to my one weakness, my daughter.
Right. All right, so what's the final word here on Stranger Things?
I'm liking it so far. I'm intrigued by some of the things you spoiled.
Did I spoil much?
No, it's okay. Fine. It's fine. I'm excited to see the remainder of it. I will actually. I'm very interested now.
In episode 7.
I almost wish you had said one of the episodes.
You're gonna troll. Well, you would know immediately.
Like, right? No, but I wish you would have done that. One of the episodes coming up. I'm curious of your. So, anyways,
I know you're gonna troll me on this. You're gonna post something on Facebook and you're gonna be like, "Episode 7, my favorite."
Oh, I'm gonna do it on the psychology fan page. I'm gonna be like, "This is better." You know what I'm gonna say? I'm gonna say finally something trumped the movie Broken Flowers for me.
Broken Flowers.
Yeah, there's an inside joke because so back when Broken Flowers came out with Bill Murray,
uh-huh.
Did you ever watch that? Okay, so it was after Sleepless in Tokyo or whatever it's called, you know, Love in Tokyo. What's that one?
Lost in Translation.
Lost in Translation. There we go. After that movie, which by the way I loved, right? Broken Flowers came out. And there was a lot of buzz, a lot of people talking about
it's
it.
Like
it was
Lost in Translation 2.
One of those really good indie movies. And my friend Mitch and I were like, oh, we totally need to see Broken Flowers. Oh, absolutely. And we were like, yeah, we got to see it. We got to see it. And then we didn't. And then time went by. But I remember I posted like my favorite movies and I added Broken Flowers in there. And so he did too. And so for a while, the joke was like we would both list Broken Flowers as one of our favorite movies. But we'd never seen it. And then eventually the traitor watched it without me. So now I'm the only one who's, and I hope no one hears this podcast because as far as anyone knows, I have seen and love Broken Flowers as one of my favorite movies. I should have brought it up during our favorite movie episode.
Well, that does it for that episode of Psychology in Seattle. Thanks for joining me out there. Please take care of yourself because
you deserve it.